Barhill Records. Der Talk.
Hallo, hier ist Barhill Records, der Talk. Ich stelle in jeder Folge MusikerInnen bzw. Bands vor, die entweder bei meinem Label Barhill Records unter Vertrag stehen oder mit denen ich in meiner Funktion als Musikjournalist gesprochen habe. Zu Gast in Folge 25 ist Bob Hardy, Bassist und Gründungsmitglied der schottischen Indie-Art-Rocker Franz Ferdinand. Im Januar 2025 erschien deren sechstes Studioalbum The Human 4, mit dem die Band im Frühjahr 2026 erneut durch Europa tourt. Zu diesem Anlass habe ich mich mit Hardy unterhalten, mit ihm auf die Anfänge der Band zurückgeblickt und ihn gefragt, wie sie es geschafft haben, trotz einiger Besetzungswechsel ihrem Sound treu zu bleiben. Viel Spaß!
Hello, Bob.
Hello.
You're English,
yes,
but part of a Scottish band.
Yes.
I guess there was never some kind of rivalry between the English and Scottish members of Franz Ferdinand, was it?
No. Well, I mean, no, not written. No, because, I mean, we're not the kind of people that, we're not nationalists. So, yeah, you know, but I'd see people for more than the country they were born in.
Mm. How did you end up in a Scottish band?
Well, I left England. I grew up in Bradford in the north of England. And I left when I was 19 to go to art school in Glasgow. And so I was living in Glasgow, and that's where I met Alex and, you know, ended up forming the band with him. I really like Scotland. It's when I was a kid, we used to go to Scotland every year on holiday to like a little place in the southwest Scotland, and I always loved it since I was a kid, and then I was very excited to move there, and I've been living there since I was 19 now, and I'm 45, so well over half my life. It's a great place.
So you still live in Glasgow?
Yes.
Where you had this devastating fire yesterday night.
I know, absolutely horrific. So it makes me so sad. We were playing last night in Bristol, but you know, we were watching the news before we went onto the stage, and we came off stage. I'm just so glad it seems that the railway station has been saved, because it's an incredible railway station, really beautiful.
I know it, yeah.
Railway station. And so, yeah, no, it's all horrendous news that really makes me very sad.
Yeah, so an early video, it seemed to be like a small fire in the first floor, and then like 2 hours, 3 hours later,
raging.
And the whole building was collapsing. I mean, it's insane.
I think that it was a vape shop apparently, and I obviously there has to be an investigation. I'm purely hypothesizing, and I've read what people say online, but apparently the batteries in the vape cigarettes are very flammable. Which is, you know, we know, because that's why airlines don't let you put them in your hold luggage anymore. The whole thing is just a huge, huge tragedy. And it's just very bad for Glasgow, because we've had so many fires recently. And the art school burning down twice, and it's really impacted the city centre. And it makes me very sad that there's just more of that going on.
Mm. Let's go back in time. When did you start listening to music consciously, and why? What made you listening to music?
Well, my dad used to play music in the car. I guess that was the first the first music that I came across. We listened to the Everly Brothers and the Beatles, and then he'd play like Leonard Cohen and stuff like that. They were the things he had listened to the most. A Queen. He's a huge Queen fan. When I was, I remember being I guess it would have been like 6 or 7, and then going through my dad's record collection, which wasn't an enormous record collection because, you know, there wasn't a lot of disposable income. But I 8 years old, I was really obsessed with like Leonard Cohen, and it was the lyrics really that I was drawn to. And I would put on the first Leonard Cohen album, which my dad had on vinyl, and then read along to Suzanne. You know, the opening song is on the back of the record. Or on the inlay, wherever it was, and it was, yeah, it was great. It was really magical. I love that, and I still love that record. And then I really got into Queen myself when I was about 11 or 12, and I really got into 70s Queen. I was obsessed, you know, like the opera and like a Queen 1 and 2. I was a bit obsessed with them. And then I got into Nirvana when around that, you know, when I was about 13, I guess 14. And then I was obsessed with the Beatles for a good couple of years in my middle of my teens. And then I got into Belle and Sebastian when I was about 16, and it was just like this whole world opened up for me of contemporary music, because they, you know, once you get into a band that's making music contemporarily, you start listening, reading interviews with them, or listening to them, or hearing about their influences. Oh, Nick Drake. Well, who's Nick Drake? So you go and like, you know, you go and find out and listen to Nick Drake, and that led me down all these paths to like huge, so much music, and also the Glasgow scene as well. Like the other bands that they would tour with occasionally, like Arab Strap, or bands that they would mention, like Mogwai, and I just. Glasgow just seemed to be like the center of all this cool music that I loved. And so that was one of the reasons that I moved.
Could you name your most favorite all-time musician or band? Or is it too tough?
It's just too hard. I mean, I think Belle and Sebastian probably changed my life more than any other band. But just because they were a huge reason for me to get interested in the classical music scene. Which ended up me moving to Glasgow, and I still love them. I think they're amazing.
Can you remember when you've picked up an instrument and started to learn how to play it?
Yeah, I was 21.
Quite late, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it was. I was friends with Alex, and we worked together in a kitchen. He got me a job as a dishwasher. And we became quite good friends, and we talk about music a lot. But I wasn't a musician. I had no real interest in being a musician. I was studying painting. And then Alex was like, "Well, do you want to come round? Because my friend Mick, who was actually the bass player in Belle and Sebastian, and a friend of Alex's, had a spare bass guitar, and was like, "Look, Mick's given me this spare bass. Do you want to come round? I'll show you. I want to show you some songs I've been writing." So he like I went round to his kitchen. And he played me Jacqueline and a lot of First Verse and a bit of This Fire. And then we kind of, and then he was like, "Look, I'll this just play along." And he just like, you know, so I picked up the bass and was just like very rudimentarily playing along. And that was the first time I'd really played an instrument. I mean, I played it at school, but I wasn't paying attention and I hated it.
So the story is true that Alex taught you how to play bass, and that the bass was a gift from Mick.
Yes, that's true. Alex got me to pick it up. But the thing with Franz was that like Nick was a bass player. Nick had studied bass at university, and Paul was a bass player. I think he played bass in his first band. So it was like a band of bass players. So it was quite good to being a, for being a novice, because you know they all had advice and tips and stuff. It was good.
Could one say that you were forced to play the bass guitar? I mean, the bass is quite an unpopular instrument. Not saying that it's not important, not saying that I don't like bass players, but I'm talking about the
Well,
cliche and stereotypes.
yeah, I think I would have struggled to learn an instrument to be in a band if it was like, you know, like an electric six string guitar, because there's a lot more going on. A bass on some levels, a bass can be very, very simple to play, and you can immediately, you know, it's quite punk. You can just pick it up and be in a band, and obviously then you can be as complex as you like. But to get up and running and be able to stand on stage and play an instrument, I think the bass is a good entry point. And so yeah, I mean, at that point, it wouldn't have made any sense to me to say, "Oh yeah, I'll be the drummer," you know, when Paul was this incredible drummer, you know. So yeah, it just made sense. I'm pragmatic, if nothing else.
The band took off pretty soon after you founded the band, like a year or 2 years after it. Did you have some kind of imposter syndrome
Oh
playing
yeah.
bass and just have started playing bass, and then the band took off so much?
Oh, hugely, yeah. No, huge imposter syndrome for years. No, it was strange, because in some senses it was my first band, and I thought we were really, really good. And so when we had all this success, I was like, "Well, yeah, of course, because we're good. It's obvious." And then, but then it's not as you get older. And you kind of look back, you think, oh, no, that was quite unusual. And, you know, a bit of luck involved. And, you know, and we, you know, we were a good band as well. And we are a good band. But you see so many great bands that appear and you're like, oh, my God, they are going to be huge. They're fantastic. And they don't. And for some reason, it doesn't happen. And it's, you know, it's like, why not? Those guys are brilliant. And then, yeah, and also just, yeah, standing on stage and thinking like, I'm going to get found out any minute that no one, that people are going to realize I have no idea what I'm doing here. And like, I don't, you know, I've got no, there's no good reason for me to be here apart from, you know, they need a bass player. And yeah, it took me a long time to get over that. Yeah.
Can you describe the bond you have with Alex, with whom you founded the band in 2002?
Yeah, I think our tastes cross over quite heavily in music, and also our attitudes to making stuff is a big crossover. I come from an art school background, and Alex, although he didn't go to art school, I think he instinctively employs the same sort of critical steps that you are taught at art school, you know, when you're making stuff. And Alex really enjoys like what we at art school would be called a crit, where you kind of like you sit down and you kind of like you look at the work and you kind of like you discuss it on an intellectual level. And Alex really thrives on that, and so do I. And so I think that's where our biggest kind of crossover comes from, is like talking about things abstractly and intellectually before then continuing the making, you know. Well, it's not, you know, we don't just rush into, oh, that, let's make this, oh, yeah, that'll, you know, that's 3.5 minutes long, great. We might talk about the bigger ideas behind things. Yeah.
Did you actually finish art school?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I graduated in 2003,
Okay.
like June 2003, and then we went to make the record, this first album. We signed the record contract that month, and then we made an album the following month.
Is it because of you that all the artworks of Franz Ferdinand are very stylish?
No, I mean, that comes from all of us really. Well, I mean, Alex was very much into Russian constructivism at the time. We all were really. I mean, just it just seems so to fit so well because it's so direct and simple, but also simultaneously there's a complexity to it that you don't have to pay attention to. You can just enjoy it on a surface level, but there's so much going on. And I like to think that that's kind of the kind of music we strive to make. It's stuff that music that can be enjoyed immediately and has an immediacy and a pop to it, a popness that immediately draws you in and you can enjoy immediately, but also rewards repeated listening, and it has a depth to it through the lyrics or unmusically, and that maybe isn't at first apparent, but it's like reveals itself.
In 2017 and 2021, new members joined the band. Can you describe the process of incorporating new members in a band that has been running for a while already?
Yeah, well, Julian was the first to join, and we've been working on Always Ascending for a while as a three of us, me, Paul, and Alex. That's the album Always Ascending. But we needed an extra member because we wanted to go on tour and stuff, and we couldn't do as a three piece. And Julian actually came recommended by a few people in Glasgow in the music scene. I'd never met him, but I was aware of his music, his project Meow Meow, and he put records out on Chemical Underground, and I was a huge Chemical Underground fan. I still am. It's a great label. And Stuart Braithwaite from Mogwai had said to Alex, you know, oh, you should meet Julian. I think he'd really fit in. And also, I think Paul Savage from the Delgados, he drums the Delgados, and he's like a record producer and run and he's and you know they are co-owns Chemical Underground. He'd also recommended him separately. And so we met up with him, and it was just, you know, we went for dinner and had a couple of drinks, and it just seemed like a good fit. And then he came out to the studio and we played him what we were doing, and he seemed excited by what we were doing in the same way that we were. And so we just went from there really. He felt very obvious and very, very quick and very natural. And Dino, who actually joined the same, like the year after to be an extra live player, he had been we've been friends with Dino for years, you know. By that point, Alex probably known him for like 20 years, and I'd known him for like 16 or 17 years. And he'd been in loads of Glasgow bands, and he's just an incredible musician. And he's also an art school guy, sort of painting in Dundee, and you know, he just fits in. You know, he understands he understands the mission. You know, and then in 2021, when Audrey joined, we were going to go. We wanted to go to the studio like imminently, and when Paul kind of like left, and so we needed someone to do that, and then. Julian knew her, and Dino had seen her drum in other bands, and she came down to rehearsal, and it was just immediate. Her playing, she's just like one of the greatest drummers I've ever seen play in my life. You know, it's just like wow, and just kind of sitting down and like you know the kit, and immediately just fit. And she's just such a cool person. She's like you know her just fits right in. She's like you know really really Glaswegian, really. Really into such a broad range of music, and also it's like you know she runs her own studio and she produces and mixes, so she has like a real critical ear, which is really like really cool, just really valuable.
So it was a very natural progression. It was
no
work at all, so to speak. But
yeah, well, I think we've been very lucky. Yeah, I think that yeah, so, touch wood. It's all you know, been great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The new songs definitely sound like Franz Ferdinand. I've been a longtime fan. I've got the first singles on vinyl. Even though new members were involved in the songwriting process. So was it a long process to achieve this, to ensure that the band's sound remains the same, or was it also...
Yeah, I think that when well, Alex is obviously heavily involved in the songwriting. So, and like, and then other people will dive in and put in you know, it would like, you know, put in little bits and changes and help and like, you know, restructures and stuff. But I think Alex is kind of the driving force. And so it's always going to sound like Franz Ferdinand due to that, I think. Alex's voice also is so such an important part of Franz Ferdinand. And because he has a very special voice and he has the ability to convey emotion very quickly. And directly with his singing, and I think that's a key part of Franz Ferdinand. Like you know, there's a real drama to his singing, and so and I think that and that's reflected in the music and reflected on in the stage show. You know, our gigs are quite dramatic, and I like that.
Your last album, The Human Fear, is a bit over a year old now. I really enjoyed it, and I'm happy that I'm not getting bored of the Franz Ferdinand sound because I've listened to the first record over and over back in the days and hundreds of times. Does it get harder or easier to deliver a high standard and to write good catchy songs with time?
I think what we've learned over time over the years is giving ourselves space to do that is the key thing. You know, I think if working to deadlines can be good for productivity, but I think that you still need to have a taste of normal life and like and some time away from being on the road or being in a band environment for like the best kind of songs to arrive. Some of these songs on this record were written over lockdown during COVID, and I think that was beneficial in some ways because it gave the space, and it's also it means that you're not kind of like, you know, writing and finishing a song on one week and the following week going in the studio and putting down the definitive version. You know, the songs kind of evolve over a period of months because you put them to bed for a few weeks, come back and you're like, oh, actually, maybe that bit doesn't work. Let's change it. And to have the space to do that, I think, for us is very important.
Mm-hmm. I guess you're well known in Glasgow as being part of Franz Ferdinand as well as the other members of the band. How is it when you go out? Is it that people recognize you, talk to you, or do they give you the space?
Yeah, Glasgow's a weird place. I mean, I don't people don't really do that sort of stuff. No, I have a very quiet life in Glasgow. I mean, I don't go out very much, to be honest. I haven't really been drinking for a while. But also, I don't look like I did in classic Franz Ferdinand. You know, I've got like you know, I've got the I'm bald. Like I have a beard, so you know, I can be quite anonymous.
So yeah, it's your kind of it's your way of disguising.
That's right. But it wasn't, it wasn't genetic.
There's still a steady media coverage of your band, but I guess it is some is nothing compared to the crazy times, as I would call them, in 2003 and 2004, when your band was Zeitgeist. Not saying that you're not good anymore, what I'm heading to. What comes to your mind when you look back at these first years?
It was crazy, and
And
because it
an
was my,
e-coverage every week.
no, it was, and because it was my first band, I didn't really know any different. I didn't really know what it was like to be in a band that wasn't, didn't have that kind of attention within 2 years. It was really fun. It was really, it could be stressful. It was, we were very, very busy as well. So I was, generally quite tired, but not really realizing I was tired and just kind of drinking through it. And it, but yeah, just, it was just like pretty amazing, really. I mean, I wouldn't have swapped it for anything. It was just, it was amazing. And I'm glad it lasted for a finite period of time. Because I was settling into the band after those years, it has been probably more fun. I think there's a little bit of headspace, and you can just, you can enjoy be the music side of it and like being on stage and performing to people that want to come and see you without the crazy stuff going on. But it's, at the time, I want to stop. It was great fun while it lasted, but yeah.
So I'm glad that it didn't harm your mental health, because that's also a thing nowadays, that if you have such a huge attention from the media over a longer period of time, it's probably not good for your mental health, because you.
Yeah, I think that we're all quite cynical about, the idea of fame. I think that that's something that being from Glasgow is there's a culture of not taking yourselves too seriously that we definitely fit into.
That's a good culture. I'm new mus I'm no musician, but I can imagine that some of the songs you enjoy playing live more and rather and some rather less. Are there many songs you got bored of? You don't have to mention the song titles, but
So, I mean, there are some songs I like playing more than others, and generally it's because I've been playing some of these songs for over 20 years, so the newer stuff is generally the ones you look forward to playing, or the more complex ones because it's like something more to think about. There are some songs that is just pure muscle memory, and they start, and then before I know it, it's finished, and I don't remember the playing them, because it's so a part of me, like, to play certain songs. Doesn't mean I don't enjoy it, and I still try and savor the moments on stage, all moments on stage. But something like Take Me Out, for example, I don't have to think about playing it, but I still really enjoy playing it because I'm just watching the audience, and it's the energy from the audience that you're kind of enjoying,
when it comes to a set list for your touring, do you sometimes, I mean, you have to play the classics, I guess. Probably you can play all of them. Do you sometimes kick out some classics and take some other songs into the set list? Probably less common songs of yours
Yeah,
also?
we have been broadening the what we can play, what we've rehearsed and stuff. We play a heavy slice of like the hits, if you like, or the things from the best of, mixed in with new songs from the new album and then deeper cuts from earlier albums. And we have a few of those that we rotate in and out. And it's nice being this far in and having like six albums and to choose from. Is it six? Yeah.
It's
Because it gives you that variety, and it's good for us as much as like fans who come to multiple gigs and want to hear something, a different song maybe or two.
My last question, when you go on tour, how do you personally prepare yourself for a tour apart from practicing the songs? And which items are necessary in your luggage apart from the obvious?
How do I prepare myself? Well, recently, I back in the day, you would just drink and party all the way through. So as you get older, that becomes less viable. So I generally stay away from alcohol, which is I couldn't do this, I don't think, if I were with a hangover anymore. And my Kindle or ebooks is really a big thing for me because I'm abroad a lot without bookshops that sell English language books. I can, but with an ebook, I can just get anything I want, and that's quite key.
So no drinking and ebooks. Okay. Bob, I thank you a lot for having time doing this interview on pretty short notice, and I wish you all the best for the upcoming tour. And
Thank you very much. Are you coming? Are you going
I'm
to come to
coming
the
to
show?
Luxembourg as well. Yeah, for sure. I
Great.
don't want to miss that one.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Cool. Thank you very
Say hi
much
to
for
the
your
other
time.
guys. Take care
Will
and
do.
bye
Cheerio.
bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Das war Barhillwickets, der Talk mit Franz Ferdinand Bassist Bob Hardy. Den Link zur Band und den zu meinem Label Barhill Records findet ihr in den Shownotes. Das war's für heute. Abonniert den Talk, folgt dem Talk und empfiehlt ihn gerne weiter. Bis dann. Ciao.
Barhill Records. Der Talk.